गुरुवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामायं ददाति स्वपदन्तिकं वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यरेव च पतितानां भावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरी गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 17 वर्स नंबर इज इट 11 और 12? 11. Because you covered, yeah. Yeah, so it's 11, because he... All right, verse 11. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Among the nine Varshas, the tract of land known as Bharata Varsha is understood to be the field of fruitive activities. Learned scholars and saintly persons declare the other eight varshas to be meant for very highly elevated pious persons. After returning from the heavenly planets, they enjoy the remaining results of their pious activities in these eight earthly varshas. Purport. The heavenly places of enjoyment are divided into three groups: the celestial heavenly planets, the heavenly places on earth, and the Bila heavenly places, which are found in the lower regions. Among these three classes of heavenly places, Bhoma Swarga Padhani, the heavenly places on earth are the eight Varshas other than Bharata Varsha. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, verse 21, Krishna says, Krinye Punye Martya Lokam Vishanti. When the persons living in the heavenly planets exhaust the results of their pious activities, they return to this earth. In this way, they are elevated to the heavenly planets, and then they again fall to the earthly planets. This process is known as Brahmanda Brahmana, wandering up and down throughout the universes. Those who are intelligent, in other words, those who have not lost their intelligence, do not involve themselves in the process of wandering up and down. They take to the devotional service of the Lord so that they can ultimately penetrate the covering of this universe and enter the spiritual kingdom. Then they are situated on one of the planets known as Vaikuntha Loka, or still higher, Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan. A devotee is never caught in the process of being promoted to the heavenly planets and again coming down. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Erupe Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagivan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bija. Among all the living entities wandering throughout the universe, one who is most fortunate comes in contact with a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus gets the opportunity to execute devotional service. Those who are sincerely seeking the favor of Krishna come in contact with a guru, a bona fide representative of Krishna. The Mayavadis indulging in mental speculation and the karmis desiring the results of their actions cannot become gurus. A guru must be a direct representative of Krishna who distributes the instructions of Krishna without any change. Thus, only the most fortunate persons come in contact with the guru. As confirmed in the Vedic literatures, tat vignanartam sa gurum eva bigach chet. One has to search out a guru to understand the affairs of the spiritual world. Srimad Bhagavatam also confirms this point. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jignasu shreya uttamam. One who is very interested in understanding the activities in the spiritual world must search out a guru, a bona fide representative of Krishna. From all angles of vision, therefore, the word guru is especially meant for the bona fide representative of Krishna, no one else. Padma Purana states, a Vaishnavo gurur nasyat. One who is not a Vaishnava or who is not a representative of Krishna cannot be a guru. Even the most qualified Brahmana cannot become a guru if he is not a representative of Krishna. Brahmanas are supposed to acquire six kinds of auspicious qualifications. These are the six. They become very learned scholars, patana, and very qualified teachers, patana. They become expert in worshiping the Lord or the demigods, yajana, and they teach others how to execute this worship, yajana. They qualify themselves as bona fide persons to receive alms from others, pratigraha, and they distribute the wealth in charity, dana. Yet even a brahmana possessing these qualifications cannot become a guru unless he is a representative of Krishna, guru nasyat. Vaishnava shapucho guru. But a Vaishnava, a bona fide representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, can become a guru even if he is shrapacha, a member of a family of dog eaters. Of the three divisions of heavenly planets, Swarga Loka, Bhoma Swarga, is sometimes accepted as the tract of land in Bharatvarsha known as Kashmir. In this region, there are certainly good facilities for material sense enjoyment, but this is not the business of a pure transcendentalist. Rupa Goswami describes the engagement of a pure transcendentalist as follows. Anya bilashita shrunyam jnana karma dinavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. Quote, one should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. This is called pure devotional service. That's the end of the quote. Those who fully engage in devotional service to Krishna just to please him are not interested in the three divisions of heavenly places, namely Divya Swarga, Bhoma Swarga, and Bila Swarga. Hare Krishna. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, A Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punar Avartino Juna Mamu Petu Tukonteya Purnar Janma Navidyate. Krishna says from the topmost planet in the material universe, that's called as Brahmaloka, all the way down to the lowest planet in the material universe, that's called as Patalaloka. Krishna says all of them are places of misery. What is the reason? Yeah, because they're material. What's the reason? Because mṛtyu samsāra vartmani. Because repeated birth and death take place there. And therefore, they're all places of misery. Any place where one is threatened by death cannot be ultimately a happy place. And the Srimad Bhagavatam gives an example of, well, it gives a couple of examples. Well, the Bhagavatam gives one example and the Purport gives another. The Bhagavatam gives an example of man who is sentenced to death. And before he goes for death, he's given like a last supper. So can he enjoy that last supper? This is what I've told many times. If you are sentenced to death, so before they execute you, they bring all your favorite preparations. Pineapple halva. Sean likes pineapple halva. They bring you all your favorite preparations, and then can you enjoy that? After you finish your meal, then you are sent to be executed. So obviously it would be very difficult to enjoy. Every bite would be a source of misery. Similarly, if you are, suppose one, what do they call it? Guillotine. Bhagavatam gives an example also. It's swinging over your head by a thin thread that is slowly unraveling. Could you peacefully eat your prasadam underneath that guillotine? It would be very difficult. So death is like this. At any moment it can strike. So therefore Krishna says all of the places in the material world are miserable. Although there are different facilities for enjoyment on different places, we're hearing about three types of swargas, or heavenly regions. One is in the upper planetary system, that's called Divya Swarga. Then there's one on the earthly planet called Boma Swarga. And Prabhupada says, some say that's Kashmir. Anyone here been to Kashmir before? Kashmir, that's in India, or it's like near the Himalayas, is it? Near the Himalayas. Kashmir, you've been to Kashmir before? No? So Prabhupada says some places at Boma Swarga, and then Bila Swarga is in the lower planetary regions. You hear about some of the lower planetary regions, they sound way more fantastic than Earth planet. And that's kind of Bila Swarga. So these are different types of Swarga, where there's different types of material enjoyment available for the living entity. But Krishna summarizes his discussion on that in one verse. They're all places of misery, because repeated birth and death take place. What difference does it make if you can enjoy happy life there? Even the devatas, it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, they're always stricken by fear, because at any moment they know that they're going to drop out of this heavenly region and come down. Kshinye punye martya lokam vishanti. That Prabhupada quoted that verse also. Imagine you're just walking around, at any moment you can just drop down into a lower situation. It wouldn't be a very comfortable situation. So in that way, Krishna gives a summary. All the places in the material world are miserable due to repeated birth and death. Although it's such a simple point, it is actually hard to realize. Krishna says in the very previous verse of the verse I just quoted from Gita, I don't remember it. Mamu petu tukonteya dukalayam ashashvatam. What is that? No. Dukalayam ashashvatam. Napnuvanti mahatmanaha sasidam paramam gata. This is the previous verse to the verse I just quoted. Krishna says that the great souls, Mahatmas, they realize that the world is Dukalayam Ashashvatam, that it is a house of misery, Dukha Alayam, like Himalaya. Hima Alaya means the home of snow. So Dukha Alaya means the home of misery. That's the material world, it's a torture chamber. And it's Ashashvatam, it's temporary. Who can realize that? Nabnuvanti Mahatmanaha, the great souls, they realize this. So although anyone can actually perceive it, anyone can understand that the material world is temporary, anyone can understand that it's full of misery, although in America they tend to have a little bit tougher time because they may not be perceiving like the typhoon situation or the war situations and so on. But by a little bit of observation, one can see the temporary nature of the material world. And one can see the miserable situation in the material world, but that usually doesn't stop jivas from pursuing it with full enthusiasm. So that means it's actually very tough to realize it. It's like saying, I know that's a mirage, and then running after it. You know, I know this is a mirage, but you start running after it. That is, of course, what we call foolishness, but that's what's going on in the material world. You can see that it's actually temporary, and yet when a very dear sense object comes before you, you run after it. So therefore, Krishna chooses his words very nicely. He says the Mahatmas, they actually realize the nature of the world, this Dukalayam Ashashvatam. Others may be knowing about it, but only the great soul can actually understand it. Therefore, he stops pursuing it, and he pursues Krishna. Samsadim paramam gataha. He attains complete perfection by attaining the lotus feet of Krishna. So that's the summary of the material world being discussed here. It was actually discussing the different places of material enjoyment. But Prabhupada says he focuses more on the person who's trying to get out of that situation after ascertaining its futility. how does he ascertain the futility of this wandering up and down the material world? How does he understand? Yeah, by hearing. How does he understand? Mercy of Guru, hearing, yes. How does he understand? Well, if he's a fool, experience is no avail to him, unfortunately. It says experience is the best teacher, but only a fool learns by no other method. However, it is seen that experience is usually not sufficient enough to gain realization. Maybe Bahunam Jamanan Ante continued experience over many lifetimes, but which is Krishna's program for gradually purifying the jivas. Just like Prabhupada gave the example of a woman who experiences childbirth, and apparently it's a very painful experience. Those in the male body will never have to know that. But we can understand by hearing that it's a very painful experience, and Prabhupada would give this example. But and then when the woman's having the baby, she says, "I'll never do this again. I'll never do this again." And then she has another child and another one and another one. So experience doesn't seem to be good enough. How does one understand that the material world is useless? Of course, you've given part of the answer. And you said hearing, you said guru, so I guess you hear from the guru. How do you understand that the material world is a useless place? Prayer. How does that answer my question? How do you understand the material world is a useless place? By examining. What's your answer? Okay, what's your answer? They gave part of the answer, it's true. I'm just looking at the verse. If you're fortunate, you understand. Bhagyavan jiva. Understand? Erupe brahmanda brahmite kona bhagyavan jiva. The living entity is wandering up and down. If he's fortunate, understand? He can understand this. And how does he understand? Because he hears from the guru. He hears from the guru. Of course, in order to make that hearing effective, he has to be receptive. So it is mentioned, tasma gurum prapadyeta jignasu shreya uttama. He has to be receptive. If he's fortunate, either by prolonged experience over many lifetimes or by the process of hearing, he comes to realize the futility of the material world. That realization allows him to be receptive to higher grace. And otherwise, he cannot receive the message. One who is too attached to the material world, he'd not be able to hear anything. Everything the spiritual master will speak will help to direct our consciousness towards the supreme reality, the spiritual reality. And the spiritual master will do that by positive and negative concomitants. Positive concomitants means he'll glorify the spiritual world. Negative concomitants is he'll criticize or point out the negative aspects of the material world. And by both processes, he tries to guide our attention towards the spiritual world. So if one is too much attached to the material world, when he hears the criticisms of the material world, he does not appreciate. And because of his attachment to it, he doesn't appreciate. Especially when it comes to certain critiques, like on our attachment to opposite sex, or various particular critiques that really tend to pinch the conditioned souls. But those things are, of course, ultimately meant to direct our attention towards the spiritual reality. So Prabhupada spends most of the purport discussing who's a bona fide guru. Who's a bona fide guru? Okay. Yay, Krishna Tattvaveda, say guru hoy. He knows the science of Krishna. Who's a bona fide guru? Any other answer? Okay. Any other answer? Shabda Pur, what does that mean? Shabda means what? Sound vibration. Yeah, it refers to the scriptures. Shabda Pure Chanishnatam. He is learned in the Shastra. He has spacious understanding of the Shastra. Most of the devotees, we got the gist. We got the gist of what the Shastra is saying. Most of us are probably quite satisfied with the gist and giving my prasadam. But the Guru, Shabda Puresha, he has spacious understanding of the Shastra by which he is able to remove the doubt of the disciple. The idea of this verse is that the disciple himself also has faith in the Shastra. Otherwise, if he doesn't have faith in the Shastra, then there's no way the Guru can remove his doubt. Because the Guru will repeat only what the revelation is telling. The revelation means the Shastra is telling. So if the disciple has no faith in the Shastra, the Guru is not actually able to help him. So minimum faith has to be there. Shraddha means faith in Shastra, actually. That's what Shraddha means. The the basic shraddha that allows a person to be progressive in spiritual life is faith in revelation. Because ultimately, the spiritual reality is what's called as achintya. Achintya means it cannot be understood by our mental efforts. What is that verse? Nane prayasam udapasya namanta eva. Bhakti begins by throwing out our attempt to understand the spiritual reality by our own reasoning faculties. You cannot understand a subject. A subject means a living entity by mental speculation. That's not possible, especially if it's a subject that you've never met before. Isn't it? Like, suppose I have a friend named Tony, and you never, we'll use Tatikshava Karunika. That's a little more transcendental. So if I have such a friend that you've never met before, how could you speculate about him? Is it possible? You've never met, his karmic name was Tony. You've never met him, can you speculate about him? Can you speculate anything about him? Have you never met him before? No, if you've never even seen him, you don't even know anything about him, can you speculate anything? Practically speaking, practical. Can you speculate? This is a Mayavadi situation, huh? Huh? No, you have no associates, nothing. Will you speculate? You cannot. He's a subject that you've never met, so you cannot speculate anything. So similarly, the absolute truth is a subject that we've never met before. Therefore, how you can speculate anything? You have not met, you have not seen, you have not interacted. So how you can speculate anything about the subject? Therefore, the primary, that has to be foundational understanding and discussion of God. He is a subject that I have never met before. I have never interacted with, I have never seen before. And therefore, there is a necessity for revelation. Revelation becomes the all-important and only means of knowing such a subject. Just like you've never met Tony, now how you will come to know of Tony? How do you even come to know of his qualities, how he exists, etc.? How do you come to know? Huh? It is revealed to you. Either you get a direct revelation from Tony himself, he says, here I am, or someone has revealed some information about Tony. Otherwise, he's a subject that you've never met. You cannot speculate. So God is a subject, a living entity that we have never met. And therefore, how can we speculate about him? That is not possible. Therefore, revelation of who he is, that's called Shastra, or it's called a saintly person. They are all important in our pursuit and spirit, the absolute truth. What is that? Tavidi pranipatena paripashana sevaya upadek shantite jnanam. Yaninas Tatu Darshi. You know what Tatu Darshi means? He is seeing the truth. Absolute truth means Krishna. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. He is seeing the truth. So therefore, you have to approach such a spiritual master who is seeing the truth. He represents Krishna because he's seeing Krishna. He's associated with Krishna. He's interacted with Krishna. And therefore he's a devotee of Krishna. Naturally. So then Prabhupada spends a lot of time on that. He's a representative of Krishna because he's devoted to Krishna. So even if one is learned, brahmana, qualified in, there's six aspects of a brahmana. Patana, patana, yajana, yajana, pratigraha, dhana. You know what those means? You remember from the purport? Teaching others then? Okay, then pratigraha dhana. No. Qualifying himself to receive charity and giving in charity. So even one is very learned brahmana, but if he is not a Vaishnava, then he is not a guru. What is he? What is he? Not a guru, huh? A caged animal, wow. That's heavy. He's a non-devotee. He's not devoted to God, therefore means he's non-devotee. So you cannot be a guru. The only one who is guru is if he has devotion to Krishna. Even if he is a dog eater. There's a nice verse, Prahlad Maharaj. You know that verse? Seventh canto you have? I don't remember the verse because I haven't quoted it in like 2 years now. From Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj is speaking about who Krishna is pleased by. So he offers a series of verses. Krishna is not satisfied by the worship of the devatas. That means even if one is situated in the mode of goodness, but without devotion, Krishna is not satisfied by that. He is not satisfied by flattery, good words. Seven cantos there. And then he gives a long list of 12 qualities of a person. He has intelligence, he has sensory prowess, beauty, etc. But he has no devotion. Then Krishna is not at all pleased. But even if one is as dull as an elephant, anyone here as dull as an elephant? In terms of spiritual, dull as an elephant? Anyone admit it? Mm-hmm. You admit? Dull as an elephant? Dull-headed. You know, dull, like stupid. But if you have bhakti, even if you're dull as an elephant, with bhakti, then you can satisfy Krishna. That gives us great hope in the age of Kali. Manye danam bijana rupa tapasruto jasteja prabhava balapo rushapuddhi yoga naradanaya hibavanti parastipum so bhaktya tutoksha bhagavan gajayutapaya. Prahlad Maharaj is praying. I think that even if one has riches, dana, aristocratic birth, of course many of us don't have these things, so what to speak of our situation. You have beauty, your austerity, learned, sensory prowess, teja. What does teja mean? Like effulgence. Prabhava, bhala, strength, buddhi yoga, powerful and mystic yoga, buddhi, very intelligent. Already, we hardly any of these qualities are. But even if you had these, then naradanaya hibavanti parasupam so, you are not satisfied, my dear Lord, even with someone endowed with such qualities. Oh, really? Then what satisfies you? Bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gajayutapaya. You're satisfied only by bhakti. And he gives an example, gajayutapaya, just like Gajendra was able to satisfy you. Gajendra was an elephant. Then the next verse, this is the verse I was actually thinking of. Vipradisha guna yutar aravinda naba padaravinda vimukat shapacham varishtam manye tadarpita mano vachane hitarta pranam punati sakulam natubhuri manaha. These are really nice verses. Nishingadeva says anyone who recites these prayers to him, following Prahlad Maharaj's example, then he will deliver him from Maya. That's nice. Good deal, isn't it? He says, even if one is Vipradushaguna, he is a learned Brahmana who is endowed with 12 qualities, Dushaguna, which was the qualities we heard in the previous verse. He's Brahmana. Aravinda Naba, Padaravinda Vimukat. Vimukat, what does Vimukat mean? You know what Vimukat mean? So we have this verse, Sevan Unmukh. He jihwado. What does seva unmukh mean? Unmukha. And vimukat means the opposite of unmukha. Unmukha means favorably disposed. So vimukat? Yeah, the opposite. Not interested in Krishna. He is Brahmana with all these 12 qualities, but he has no interest in Krishna. Vimukat. Non-devotee. Then he is not as good as Shapacham Varishtam, a dog eater. But what type of dog eater? A dog eater who has given his mind, his words, his endeavors, Arpita, tad arpita me. He surrendered to the Supreme Lord. He's not as good as such a doggy. The idea is that he's not a doggy anymore. Although having low birth, because he's given everything to Krishna, he is better than the Brahmana who is so qualified but has no devotion for Krishna. Then he says, why? What is the reason why he is better? Pranam punati sakulam na tubhurimana. Because such a devotee can purify his whole family. Actually, many, many generations. Whereas the non-devotee cannot even purify himself. Why he cannot purify himself? Because he puffed up fellow. Because they have so many good qualities. That's what the verse explains. Because he has so many qualities, and he's not devotional, he has no devotion to God, then the qualities help to, how you say? Pull him down. Mrityu samsara vartmani, repeated birth and death. All his good qualities bind him more in the material world by his pride. Whereas the Vaishnav, he's devoted to Krishna, he purifies his whole family, which is speaking of himself. His whole family purifies. Just like Nrisingadev told Prahlad Maharaj, what was that? That 21 generations before and after you will be purified. What's interesting about that is that Prahlad Maharaj appears quite early in the creation of the universe. So there was only, he only had a few forefathers. I just read this in the Bhakti Sandarbha. There was Kashyapa, Marichi, and Lord Brahma. So three forefathers. So 21 generations. What does that mean then? Nrisingadev said 21 generations before and after you will be purified. So Jiva Goswami says this means that anyone who had connection with him in a previous life also got the benefit of his pure devotion. So to be a pure devotee means the best thing you can do for your family and what to speak of yourself is to become pure devotee of Krishna. That is the best thing you can do. Although they may not always appreciate. When they get the benefit at the time of death, they'll appreciate. So in this way, one has to search out a guru. According to your inner necessity, guru will manifest accordingly. If you are cheater, then you will get cheating guru. Guru is an expansion of the Paramatma. Paramatma is called as the Chaita Guru. He's a guru in the heart. Although it is mentioned that guru, the super soul is neutral, that means that he is not particularly favorable towards anyone or against anyone. But he is reciprocating with the living entities according to their desire. So if someone desires something genuine, super soul helps out. He's called as the Chaita Guru. But because of our lack of devotion, we cannot hear the Chaita Guru. So the Chaita Guru comes out externally as Shiksha Guru, Diksha Guru. Shiksha Guru Hai, Krishna Mahanta Sarupa. He comes out as a great devotee of Krishna to instruct us. And it's mentioned that only by the help of the Guru in the heart can you recognize the Guru from without. So many times people have this question, how do I recognize who is Guru? Many times this question is coming up. So how do I know who is my Guru? So that means we need help of a guru within. Super soul exists in this world as the inspiration guiding the living entities. Mataha, Shmiti, Gyanam, Opohanam cha. The inspiration guiding living entities' movement in this world is due to the influence of super soul. What is that other verse from Bhagavad Gita that Prabhupada quotes a lot? Ishvara Sarvabhutanam, Hridesha Arjuna Tishrati, Brahmayam Sarvabhutani. Jantra Rudhani Mayaya. The living entity is situated on a jantra, the machine of the material body, the material energy. And Krishna is situated in the heart of that living entity, is guiding his movements. So Krishna is the inspiration moving all the souls in the material world. He's the inspiration for every activity happening in the material world. Otherwise, the living entities wouldn't know what to do. They couldn't do anything, in fact. So he is a guru in the heart. And he manifests externally according to your desire to have something genuine. So if you want something genuine, you should be able to get it sooner or later. One need only try to root out insincerity in his heart. to the degree we are possessing insincerity, to that degree we get confused about, to that degree it is hard to place trust, because we may not be even trusting our own intentions. So therefore we have a hard time trusting others, isn't it? People who have a hard time trusting, it could be also due to they have a hard time trusting their own intentions. Because if one is genuine, it should not be very difficult to contact something genuine. If there are 1,000 gurus in the room, all of them are false gurus, only one is bona fide, then if you are genuine, super souls, say that one. Such is the power of sincerity. Sincerity is so powerful that if you are genuine wanting the real thing, do you want Sat, the truth? Then room full of 1,000 gurus, all are false gurus, only one is genuine, super soul will guide you, that one. So one needs to root out one's own insincerities, as mentioned. And then guru appears before you. Of course, guru manifests in many forms. So that gets a little challenging when we're not mature. When there are Diksha Guru, and there can be so many Shiksha Gurus who all guide us on the path back home, back to Godhead. So we have to trust our aspiration for truth. We have to nourish our aspiration for truth. Then many gurus may appear to you in one lifetime to guide you back home, back to Godhead, and you will be able to immediately recognize them on account of your own, on account of the super soul helping you to recognize that due to your own aspiration for truth. If you only see guru in terms of the bodily form, then you will be misguided. You'll be misguided. Therefore, we have to want the truth severely. Therefore, that is where we may be struggling the most, in our desire for truth. As we get strong desire for truth, then Krishna manifests in the form of many gurus to move one back home, back to Godhead. Just like Gopakumar has so many Shiksha gurus along the way, isn't it? He was traveling to all the heavenly regions, then in Vaikuntha. He met so many gurus to help him in his progress toward Godhead. And they're all equal manifestations. It's not like one was better than the other. But they are all manifesting according to his particular necessity at a particular time. And because it's his intense desire for the truth, that was due to the influence of chanting his Gopal mantra sincerely. It is mentioned there, because he sincerely chanted his Gopal mantra, even when he got the position of Lord Brahma and Lord Indra, that would be pretty nice, isn't it? Such powers. I like movies like, I don't know if any of you grew up in things like Power Rangers and all these things. And anything that had powers is very attractive, where you can manipulate the material energy. So he got such a position as Indra, as Lord Brahma, but he never got attracted to that. And the Briya Bhattamrita explains, because when he was chanting, it was due to the influence of his sincerely chanting the Gopal mantra. He didn't even know what it meant, but he just knew that his guru gave it to him. His guru was pure devotee, Premi Bhakta. But he gave him the mantra, and then he went into ecstasy and disappeared. He didn't see him for a long time after that. As mentioned, he didn't see him for a couple of kalpas after that. Kalpas like thousands of years. But because he felt grateful towards his guru, he was just chanting it sincerely. So it said, due to the influence of his sincere chanting of the Gopal mantra, he maintained intense simplicity. So therefore, even when he got the position of Lord Brahma, Lord Indra, so many nice positions for manipulating the material energy, he never got attracted to that position. He was always looking for the highest thing, how he can see his beloved Lord in the heart. That desire was nourished by his sincere chanting of the Gopal mantra, even though he didn't know what he was chanting. He didn't know deeply the science behind the mantra he was chanting. So in a similar way, as we sincerely chant Harinam and associate with the sound vibration of the Shastras and thus nourish our desire for truth, then many gurus will manifest in your life to guide you back home, back to Godhead. And you'll be able to recognize such gurus, as did Gopal on Gopakumar, on account of his desire for the truth. He got certain information that would help him progressively on. Then he required further information for his further progress. Another guru will manifest. That doesn't mean that it always happens like that, but it can happen like that. And it generally is a case that it does happen like that in many cases in the history of our lineage. So we have to want Krishna intensely, sevam mukhidriya, jivado. And we can nourish that intensity beginning with chanting Harinam sincerely. And then when Guru manifests, because it is not easy to recognize also, even say he should be a devotee, he should know the shastras, there can be so many people who may not be bona fide who can deceive us. But sincerity is more powerful than anything in this world. And sincerity is of the nature of absolute truth. So one who has real sincerity, all false things disappear, and he gets attracted to the real thing, and he makes progress. So it takes, in other words, only by an intensity of our desire for the truth can we break through our small-mindedness that tends to restrict Guru only to a certain form or to a certain situation or sometimes even to a certain institution. Only if you desire the truth will you be able to become broad-minded. That doesn't mean immediately you'll become broad-minded. So don't think, yes, I like this. Now I am broad-minded individual. I'm wanting the truth. And that way you'll be hearing from everyone, you'll get lost. You'll become lost in the ether, like a riven cloud. But it is a fact that according our inner necessity should be expanding as we grow in Krishna consciousness. It is not that it stays static. It should be, what is taking place in our heart should be dynamically increasing as we're moving forward in Krishna consciousness. So then according to our necessity, it may be required to receive a particular type of guidance at a certain point in your Krishna consciousness for further development according to your necessity. And only if you desire the truth will you be able to break through the hemming, let's say, of the previous conceptions that were useful for you at one point, but which may now be a form of restriction for you at another point in your development. These are, of course, subtle points. You'll come to realize them as you grow in your own Krishna consciousness. But this is how you come to recognize Guru. Tasma Guru Pripateta Jignasu Shreya Uttamam. Everything is in that second line, Jignasu Shreya Uttamam. How intensely are we inquisitive about our highest potential as living entities? Then you get Guru accordingly. You can recognize. Are there any questions? I talked too much today. It wasn't meant, but Om Tat Sat.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your class. The contradiction one runs into in his spiritual life is that as he notices his aspirations for the truth growing, becoming more significant and becoming higher, at the same time he sees that I'm actually very offensive, or that I'm very, very unqualified to even have such aspirations. And that creates a sense of, it makes you wonder if your aspirations are realistic. So what to do about that?
Well, how can I be sincere if I'm offensive? That's basically what you're saying, right? If you see yourself so offensive, then you may question your own sincerity. Well, are you offensive on purpose? You're offensive on purpose? You commit offenses on purpose? So how is it? Of course we are offensive, because we're ignorant. When one is ignorant, one is offensive. But I just read this in Bhakti Sandarbha 2 days ago, that for those who are offensive but due to ignorance, those offenses don't become severe impediments in their progress, although it slows them down. So therefore, there's a need for getting enlightenment by higher levels of sadhu sangha and giving up the offenses. But those who are having knowledge by which they can discriminate, and they are offensive, then those type of offenses create gigantic blockage. So if you receive, in other words, those who have knowledge, they're in a position of greater responsibility because they have the ability to discriminate. So if they commit offenses even after that, then those offenses become greater impediments in their progress. Although nothing can stop the progress of bhakti, ultimately, because it's inexhaustible, Krishna says it's avyayam in Bhagavad Gita. Susu kam kartum avyayam. Avyayam means it's imperishable. But it can severely slow it down if you're having discriminatory knowledge and committing offenses. But if one is doing so out of ignorance, which is a type of anartha actually, just out of ignorance doing offensive things, that will slow it up, but it won't create major impediments. So one need not doubt his sincerity. In fact, if our desire for Krishna consciousness is growing, that is indicative of some level of good practice, sincere practice. In fact, one of the Jiva Goswami gives five indications five results of offenses. And I can't remember all of them. But one of the results of offenses, the first one is crookedness develops in the person. The second one was pride on account of whatever devotional service is doing. He's proud, then that means his practices are offensive. Therefore, he's becoming excessively proud instead of the opposite. Another one that was mentioned was his devotional practices and consciousness decreases. There's a decrease so if we find it's an increase, then that's usually an indicator of something genuine is happening. Although, due to ignorance or offense, so we have to get associate properly, gain knowledge, and then practice nicely. Right. Is there anything else? Anyone wants to say anything further? No? Okay. The five, no, I just remember three of them. So one, cricket, I can go look it up again. I'm just perusing through. I'm not reading I'm not assimilating a lot of things. But it was mentioned five, and crookedness, pride, decrease of practices and devotional service. Faithlessness, of course, is one of them. One becomes faithless. There's one other one. I don't remember what it is. I'll look it up and tell you later. Is there anything else anyone wants to ask?
Maybe it's a subtle sort of understanding, I guess. But let's say sometimes we experience a little fear in our spiritual life. Let's say if we're trying to perform our duty nicely, and somehow or other it's not going very well, we experience a little fear. Can you explain maybe what that's all about?
Why we experience fear?
Yeah, why maybe there's still a little fear of death?
Oh, well, that type of fear, like fear of death, that's due to absorption in the temporary. That means the body concept of life. This verse is there. Bhayam duti ya binivesha tashad ishade pe tashra vipariyo ashmitihi maya yato buddha abhijaitam bhaktiya kiyesham Gurudevatma comes here too. The verse says that the conditioned souls, we have turned away from God. Ishade paitasha means turn our back on God or turn our consciousness away from God. And as a result, viparaya ashmitihi, we have a reverse conception of life. Reverse conception of life means that which is a source of bondage, we'll think to be a source of freedom. That which is a source of bewilderment, we'll think to be a source of clarity. And so on. Everything we'll see in a reverse way on account of turning away from God. And ashmitihi means here, according to our charts, it means he becomes forgetful of himself as a soul. He loses information of himself as a living entity, as a soul. So on account of that, he gets, on account of that ignorance, ashmitihi, he gets what's called a false ego. I think I am so, dot, dot, dot. And according to that false ego, he becomes absorbed in a secondary thing. That means, dvitiya abhinivesha means he becomes absorbed in a secondary thing. That means something that's not Krishna. He becomes absorbed in that according to his false ego. So you think, like I was talking to students yesterday, if I think I'm a polar bear, then this weather is fantastic. And there's plenty of nice eatables around. I become absorbed in a secondary thing according to my false identity with the material world. And according to that false identity, I experience fear. Absorption in the temporary is necessarily fearful because it's temporary. You know that you'll soon lose everything that you hold near and dear. So it's a natural fearful situation. Absorption in matter means a natural fearful situation. So everything in the material world is compelled by this fear. Of the four types of things, ahara nidra, bhayam, maitunam. Ahara means eating, nidra means sleeping, maituna means sex life, and bhaya means fear. We usually say defending, but it means fear. Fear is the main thing compelling living entities in this material world. Fear of not being accepted or fear of being rejected in a certain social situation or by a family, fear of not meeting expectations of many other persons. We have so many types of fears. This is on account of absorption in the body, according to Bhagavatam. So it's due to maya. Yamaya yato means it's due to maya. So how do you get out? Buddha Abhijaitam, if you're intelligent, Buddha, if you're a smart guy, then what do? Bhakti eka isham, exclusive bhakti to isham, Krishna, the controller of maya. Guru deva tatma, seeing one's guru as deva. Deva means worshipable deity, as opposed to this body, in other words. That's the idea. We think that the body is a worshipable deity. Like Prahlada Nandamara, she always says when he comes here, in the morning time, we bathe the deity, we perform abhishekam. And then we clothe the deity, we decorate the deity very nicely. We suganda, we put nice oils on the deity so that it smells good. And then we work hard day and night for the deity, like that. We think that the body is a worshipable deity. But one should think, Guru Deva, the Guru is Deva. He is a worshipable deity. And Atma, he is non-different from myself. So that means as I work hard due to desire to please myself, in the same way I work for the Guru. Guru Deva Tatma. Bhakta Eka Isham, Guru Deva Tatma. Only by bhakti, exclusive bhakti to Krishna, with this type of devotion to Guru, then one can give up that type of fear, like the fear of death, the fear that is due to absorption in maya. Now, when you enter into the realm of devotional service, fear can play a healthy role too, like fear of committing offenses. But that shouldn't be the absorption point. Like, I'm afraid of committing offenses, so you like become like this, you know, I'm afraid. That may be a consideration that is helpful in being progressive. Although our absorption point will be devotion to Krishna, how to just increase our devotion to Krishna. But that type of fear which you talked about, Guru, is maybe our devotion needs to be a little intensified. And our devotion to Guru, our devotion to Krishna, maybe it should be intensified. And then, although sometimes we hear like this, sometimes we hear like this, that we don't need to do so much because ultimately Guru, Prabhupada, Krishna, they will take us back, they're going to open the door for us and so on. And this tends to adversely affect our absorption in devotional service if we think like that. It's like the Christians, sometimes they say like that, never mind what their consciousness is, as long as I believe in Jesus, then I'm going back. Now we generally tend to criticize that because Krishna says that, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam, according to how your consciousness is absorbed, then you get a result accordingly. So sometimes devotees, they also tend to think like this sometimes, that it doesn't matter how much we try. As long as we put a little effort for it, then the rest will be done by Krishna. And the ultimate issue, that could be true, but the direction we get in Shastra is not exactly like that. The direction we get in Shastra is for intensity in our practices of devotional service. And the more intense, the better. There's so many statements like that all throughout the Shastras. And as we get more and more absorbed in Krishna, we get less and less absorbed in matter. And once you're less absorbed in matter, there's no question of fear. So fear is coming due to our turning away from God. So then the solution lies in shifting our awareness toward God. So it may take some time. Chant Hari Nam and be happy. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om.
developments in our teaching.
With the Krishna Mantra thing? But I heard it's not that big a deal because Rasika Mantra has.
Hopefully.
Oh, she doesn't have?
We have.